Right now, it is a time for This Week in the Lakeville Journal. And if I've done everything right, we have both Cynthia and Janet with us. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
All right. Well, I've done everything right. It's a rare occasion since I've been back to work after being sick.
Well done, and we're glad to be back and hope you're doing better.
Much better. I appreciate the folks that work at the Sharon Hospital and the local ambulance squads. They are all fantastic.
Great. Good.
Well, let's go out to the front page of the Lakeville Journal. And I just got a letter this morning from John Bevins. There is a protest going on at 10 o'clock this morning. The DEEP is staying the course. They're going to continue to cut pines. They apologize. But so there's at 10 o'clock this morning, there's going to be people that are going to be out there, and they're asking people to show up and protest.
In this cold weather, and it's really been, an issue that's been heating up. Really, over several weeks, we had a front-page story on it a couple weeks ago, and there was a large clear-cutting of old oaks. And the state's concern is that this is the parking and picnicking and camping area at Housatonic Meadow State Park over by the big concrete bridge that connects Cornwall and Sharon right over the Housatonic near the gas station. They clear-cut a bunch of oak trees. And you can kind of see from their point of view, it's like, well, we had to take the trees down, and we can't really pick and choose. We're not foresters. We're just going to cut. So there were a lot of big, beautiful oaks cut down. Many of them needed to be cut down. Probably some of them didn't. And there's a second culling that's about to happen, presumably today, of 66 pine trees. The DEP had Mason Trumbull did have a public meeting. I think about 50 people showed up on Zoom to say that they don't want another of this kind of clear-cutting. Maria Horn and our state senator, Craig Miner, took part in the meeting. And at the end of the meeting, there's some misunderstanding on what the decision was. And so what Mason Trumbull said was, we're very sorry that we went through and cut all those oak trees. We won't do that again. We'll be more selective. There are trees, though, that are dead, and they have to come down. So they selected 66 pine trees. Those have to be cut. And then a group of people felt like what they heard was there was going to be a moratorium on the cutting, and were sort of unhappily surprised this week to realize that that's not actually what's happening, that they are still planning to cut the trees. A group led by John Bevins and Michael Motion and Jamie Longy has been very, very active and outspoken in talking about going out to protest, really a very old-school type protest where they're planning to peacefully lie down in front of trucks or chain themselves to trees. Fortunately, I think that that's not going to be allowed to happen. I hope nobody will be hurt. But there is there was a group that was out there yesterday protesting. And they were the whole area had to be roped off. There were DEP, Environmental Conservation Police, there. And today, I think that specifically to make it more visible for the media, they're actually planning to have people out there with signs at 10 a.m. And so our photographer, Lance Christensen, will be there. If you want to participate in this killing of the 66 pine trees, which the DEP considers a danger, but which the Save the Tree group considers to be an unhealthy cutting of trees, you're welcome to go out and join them. It's Housatonic Meadow State Park, 10 a.m. today.
And this just isn't a group of people. In this group of people that are upset about this, there are arborists, there are people that know what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very interesting standoff. We'll see what happens with it. Not too cold to ski. I'm sorry, I don't understand that headline.
There they are. All of us and Jill.
Honest to
but
gosh.
Some people liked it. Lance Christensen happened to be down at Mohawk, and he took a bunch of photos, and he said, and Leela Hawken is calling over to Mohawk this week just to check on these numbers, but Lance's impression was it was the busiest weekend he'd seen there, possibly one of the biggest, busiest weekends that they've had at Mohawk, and of course this is their 75th anniversary year, and of course we celebrate Mohawk for its founder, I think it's Rolf Schenkel, having created the modern snowmaking machine. But so lots of kids out there, and of course Martin Luther King weekend coming up and President's Day, so those are always big weekends for Mohawk. We're happy to see them back in business and thriving after a difficult COVID season.
And the past week and a half has been perfect for every ski area to make snow and for Swasa to make snow, so there's no problem with the ski areas. There's plenty of snow.
Be careful you don't slip in the parking lot.
That's right. All right, so now, a story that I talked about the other day. It's the first time it happened, and it's coming at a time when everybody is being exposed to this. Noble finally had their first resident with a COVID case. They've been asked by the state to accept COVID patients.
So this is kind of what we saw back in March 2020 when there was a lot of concern about, you know, where are people going after they're released from the hospital but before they're really safe to go back home, and especially if they're elderly or at risk in some way, you don't really want them at home with nobody to care for them. So the state is now asking, not requiring, nursing homes to take on additional patients who are in this transitional period. Sharon Healthcare, I would have to say, was treated very badly in early COVID when they set aside a wing of the Sharon Healthcare Center to accept these interim COVID patients. The community really gave them a hard time for what really was a kind of a compassionate thing to do. So Sharon Healthcare not stepping up this time. They did not return our phone call asking for comment, but both Noble Horizons and GEAR said, you know, it's a tough position for us. We want to help these people. You know, every life is important to us, but we're understaffed as it is, and we're trying very hard to keep these numbers down as this very contagious Omicron variant is really burning its way through the northwest corner.
And we'll even though I didn't have COVID when I took the ambulance in, the ambulance squad came in full COVID gear. When I went into the hospital, everybody that visited my room was in full COVID gear. And I'm not just talking about, I mean, masks, plastic, and everything. And every time they left the room and came back in, they were new. This is such an easy thing to get now. No, I didn't have it. I was lucky. But it's one of those things where I just don't know how you can keep it out anymore.
And it's very hard to know who has it. The symptoms, people are often asymptomatic even when they're positive. The tests often come up negative for a while until they come up positive. And, of course, the test kits this year has been like toilet paper was back in March 2020. It's just you can't get them, and people are getting more and more anxious about it because they have travel plans or because they need to get back to work or because they're visiting a loved one in the hospital. Fortunately, hospitalizations seem to be down, deaths seem to be down. Medical professionals keep stressing those are the numbers you want to look at. And, you know, they're guessing that maybe Omicron will burn through the Northeast by the end of January, and let's hope that they're right.
All right, there's another big story that you both can contribute here. Transitions at the Lakeville Journal.
So I'll just start off, but then I'll let Janet finish. So Deborah Alexinus, who's wonderful, and actually who Janet discovered at, I think it was a meeting at the Chamber of Commerce. Deborah's been writing for us for a couple of years now, and is really a very high-level journalist, a kind person, a really fun, lovely person, as Janet and I have found, and reliable, dependable, smart, and cares a lot, and has been doing a lot of our deeper investigative stories, which require a different kind of schedule and energy level than the stories that, for instance, Patrick and Leela do, who are also great. It's a moment of transition for all of us at the Lakeville Journal Company. We have the new nonprofit status. We have a new board. I felt that it was time for me to step back and let there be a new direction for the paper in terms of news coverage, and so we asked Deborah if she would step in and take my place, and I'll let Janet take it from there.
And this came because, Cynthia, as I think everyone who reads the papers knows, has been really flat out for a while, but especially the past couple of years during COVID, because she also took on the Compass section. So what's going to happen is Cynthia will stay only at Compass and do some special sections and perhaps some other writing for us, but be much more part-time than she has been, and Deborah will become the editor of the Lakeville Journal. And we, as Cynthia said, we really are fortunate to have found her. Read the article. Her background is she worked at the Litchfield County Times as a young journalist and, has a background that gives her a good understanding of small communities like ours. So we're so glad to have her.
You know, it's interesting that you say that you found her, because what we found here and what you know there is people don't come apply for jobs out here. They don't. They don't. You run across people who are interested in what you're doing and have a background in what you're doing. And if you're lucky enough, they can come on board with you. It's a whole different animal out here.
Especially now, during and after COVID, and, you know, obviously we're still in COVID. Deb, I met at a Northwest Chamber meeting for manufacturers, and, you know, she had a good job working for Lark out of Torrington, and I could see the passion for writing still in her eyes, so I asked her if she'd like to do freelance for us at all, and, she did come on board in 2018 and has been doing a great job.
All right. I want to go inside the paper. Art Ginger got an award for helping protect a rare bird.
Art Ginger, one of these wonderful classic Cornwall people who just kind of quietly does very important work, also an arborist in our special arborist dedicated issue this week, but has been working very hard to protect the American kestrel, which is kind of one of these birds that's sort of a raptor. It's a type of a raptor and has a special box that actually Art developed a special box for the American kestrels to live in, and it's become the accepted box for all bird people who are looking to protect this type of bird. So he got an award from Aquarian. People don't realize that Aquarian and Eversource are responsible for much of the land conservation that happens in this part of Litchfield County. They obviously need to protect the land, especially the water and area around the water. And so Aquarian has given an award, a cash award to Art, and Art in turn has turned it over to the Cornwall Conservation Trust.
Now, looking at the paper, three towns and three situations. First of all, I think it's maybe 10 or 15 years, a new P&Z head in North Canaan, some upset and some swirl around in Kent about the emergency services resignation and also the funds for the COVID funds to the towns. And a four-way stop is being planned in Falls Village.
No, it's exciting. It's not a traffic light.
No.
Four-way stop. So Tim Abbott... people don't realize, but most of our towns haven't had planning and zoning regulations for that long, and I think North Canaan was the last or one of the last towns in the region to get it. And if you look over in New York State, there's still towns that don't have zoning. People often say, as they're looking at the different towns, you can see visually the difference between Connecticut and New York, because Connecticut is a little bit more sort of buttoned up and zoned. North Canaan, when it got its planning and zoning, very shortly after it got planning and zoning, Steve Allen, who's from one of the local big families, became the chairman of the Planning and Zoning Commission. And like anybody in a public position, some people love him, some people are challenged by him. But he's been running that commission for many, many years now, and not always easy years. Like for the moment, I think for about 6 months or so, there was no zoning enforcement officer in North Canaan. He had to do both jobs. That's a big job, especially during COVID, as people are doing a lot of renovation. So Steve ran for re-election. They invited Tim Abbott, who is well-known to us as an environmentalist. He was a Nature's Notebook columnist, lovely guy. And he ran on the ticket as a Democrat next to Steve Allen, thinking that he had run for office before, had not been elected, but they felt they wanted to have a choice, which is nice to see on our ballots, which often are on, where people are running unopposed. Steve unexpectedly did not get re-elected. Tim did get elected and was asked at that point almost immediately to become the chairman of the commission. So when they had their first vote as a new commission, Tim was made the chairman. And so Tim is a person with great sensitivity to not just environmental issues, but to also commerce and to how people live, and is planning to be as open to the public as possible, as he discusses in our article. And then over in Kent, it's hard to know exactly what's going on. There's always a little bit of a small rumble going on at Town Hall there, which is, it's good. Like, people really advocate for themselves. And there were ongoing conversations that were sort of quietly happening about salaries, and people wanted to hire assistants. And then the one assistant was being paid a certain way, another assistant was being paid a different way. So they worked very hard to kind of pull everything into line. So something happened with the person who is the head of their emergency services thing. They were going to take ARPA funds and put together a plan. Something happened. Those funds were not turned toward that that creation of the plan. The person resigned, to the regret of Gene Speck, who had recruited him to be doing that job. So that's too bad. And we'll see with all of our towns how they move forward with their ARPA funds and what they do with them.
Yeah, I like all the towns getting their own commissions involved, the local people, and formulating ideas what to do with the funds. Most of the towns have half the funds now, and they'll get the other half the funds, and they have to spend them by next summer. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with all these different funds. And, even though there's a little rumble going on in Kent, it's a little rumble. It's more of a communication back and forth, and it's nothing that's drastic. And you know what? That's good for a town government every now and then.
Yep.
It just is. I want to move on because we only have, unbelievable, about 7 or 8 minutes left. I want to go to the opinion page first, and that is your editorial, Janet. Where will all our garbage go? And the second question, how much will it cost?
Yeah, well, exactly. And we can try to foresee the future, and there are facts we can look at right now with the changes in the way the Materials Innovation and Recycling Authority have changed what we can do with our garbage. As anyone who reads the paper knows, they will be shutting down the Hartford facility that has been taking this region's trash. And, you know, we try not to think about what happens to our garbage after we put it into the transfer station or somebody picks it up for us. We just want it to disappear, but of course it doesn't. It has to go somewhere. And this has created an issue that our towns, who have been so responsible trying to manage recycling, manage the parts of our trash being separated so that, you know, it's as responsible as possible, and suddenly no place to put it. So they're coming up with an answer that many find distasteful. We'll just have to see where it goes, but it will definitely be more expensive, and it will definitely not be what we want to happen with our garbage at this moment, but we have to look at the short term right now, as this is happening this summer, and think about long-term solutions.
And right below that, once again, you've got in your editorial, your evolving of the Lakeville Journal in that new era as a nonprofit, and also staffing and upgrading people. It's, as we know here, we've been here for 14 years now, and it's only 14 years, but still, change is good.
14 years is quite a while for a small business, and as I always say about our paper, we may be 125 years old, but it's new every week, and every year we don't know what the next year will bring. So it's always a challenge, and anyone who can make it through in this climate and in this area is doing a great job, and we're, you know, we see ourselves as part of that community. And so we talk about the transition from Cynthia as executive editor of the Lakeville Journal, and Deborah Alexinis coming on as the Lakeville Journal editor, and Cynthia going to Compass. We talk about Cynthia's tenure as editor and what it's meant for the paper. It's been a long time, and, you know, it's not a simple job. It's a hard job, but Cynthia tends to make it look easy, and we're only grateful for that, only grateful for everything she's put in for the Lakeville Journal, and look forward to, you know, the next iteration of what the journal will be. And as we always say, we want to hear from our readers what you would like to see in the paper. Do not hesitate to contact us. We have Deborah's and Cynthia's contact information in there. So Cynthia will be Compass and the Arts and Special Sections, and Deb will be the news side. But watch what we're doing and let us know what you'd like to see that you're not seeing.
And, of course, you've got lots of letters again this week.
We do. It's funny. I guess people sort of had to think after the holidays. We didn't have any last week, but happy to have these, and they're really interesting. One is on parking. Michael Clemens is telling us how they are carefully considering parking in Lakeville. Sherry Burke took a visit to the UK and is telling us what it was like there with COVID. Nat Benchley, really nice that he took the time to let us know how the Sharon Volunteer Fire Department helped the whole community, and the Shoneleys giving us inspiration for the new year.
And once again, Peter Steiner's cartoon.
Yes, it says
it all.
Yet not, yes.
But you've got two other articles there. Tom Shackman and, of course, the railroad building, which is starting to percolate in Lakeville itself. And I always talk to this about people. How this northwest corner used to produce ice years and years and years ago.
Oh, and Helen Klein-Ross tells us about this in her Hidden Histories column, which we're so glad to have once a month. It's really interesting what she's doing. And so, yeah, she talks about the northwest corner's ice age and how hard the work was. We can only imagine. If it was cold enough for our lakes to freeze feet thick. That was tough work, cutting it up into blocks and getting it out to people. She really describes it well and did a lot of research on it. And, you know, if you go online and read this column, you'll find lots of links to information that she was able to pull out, and little videos and songs, and it's really, she's doing an amazing job, and she's giving lots of other people credit for what she's doing, but she is doing a great job for us. And Tom Shachman is asking for ideas on different topics, and his first topic is, as you mentioned, the railroad station in Lakeville, at which that building has been sitting vacant for quite a while, and it's time to for the community to come together to start thinking about it, and obviously they are, and the meeting there did not happen this week, but it will happen in the near future, and read Tom's column, think about it, and let him know what you think could happen with that building that would benefit the town.
All right, and in the last 2 minutes, let's go to Compass.
And very quickly, let me say, this B section is all about things that didn't happen. There's the meeting on the Yellow Train Depot, which was scheduled for January 18th and has now been postponed or possibly canceled. But let's hope that the community comes together and can all agree on a rental use for that property, unlike what happened with the firehouse, where it was years and years before they could agree. But that meeting was canceled. Balanchine and a really interesting group of dancers at the movie house, I would say an hour after the papers were printed, they decided to postpone this until April. So we hope that everybody gets that word. But do read the article, and if it sounds interesting, come in April. Jim Flaherty, amazing guy. And, of course, Tropec has had such a wonderful renaissance. And Jim talks about his life and sort of advice on aging from a guy who's full of life and bubbly and fun. Kent Memorial Library has an event scheduled for January 29th in person. We'll see if that happens. But it's an anniversary year for them, and it's a lively recreation of some of the history. Rex Brasher, who does beautiful watercolors of birds, or did when he was alive in Kent many years ago. The organization of Rex Brasher Association is scanning, digitizing every one of his hundreds and hundreds of beautiful works, and they're looking for some support, so check out that article. And a show by Mark Wilson of Computer Art. It's not computer-generated art. These are not NFTs. These are paintings on campus that look like motherboards. And we have two articles on businesses in Cornwall that are doing great in that downtown West Cornwall section, a ski shop, but also, weirdly, the electric bike shop doing really well in winter.
Yeah, three guys ski and ride and the bike shop, absolutely. Well, it's another full version of the Lakeville Journal. We just cover portions of what's in it. The Lakeville Journal is available online at tricornernews.com and also available by picking up the paper and getting it delivered to you.
Distributor, that's right, or subscribe.
All right, guys, we'll speak to you next week.
Thank you.
Bye.
That is this week in the Lakeville Journal here on Robin Hood Radio. Once again, you can find them at tricornernews.com.